All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Edoardo Vacchi. And besides a bunch of other things, you can find me online with that nickname in different places. And so I've worked on Wasero for the best of a year and a half, 2023, 2024. And now at a company called Tetrit. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Wasero. And then I joined this company called Dalypso, and there I'm working a little bit on Wasero, and especially recently on Chicory. So I'm going to tell you how these two WebAssembly runtime work, then gave you a great introduction on WebAssembly in case you weren't that familiar with it. So I'll obviously skip the details there. And I want to tell you a little bit about Dalypso. So we built an open source framework called XDISM. XDISM is a framework to build WebAssembly plugins. So this is a different perspective. You saw the perspective of virtualizing and containerizing your workload with Dan. And here, instead, we are proposing WebAssembly as a host, as a way to create code that can be hosted in on different platforms, which is the thing that was born for, after all. So instead of the browser, you have a bunch of different runtimes, and these runtimes work better when they are embedded in some languages. So, like, Wasm Time works great for Rust, V8 works great for C and JavaScript, but what about WebAssembly that you want to run in your Go software, or on your Java VM, all right? So we have different implementation that are tailored for different runtimes depending on the application where you want to host code. And then we have the opposite side. We have a framework so that you can compile your code into WebAssembly and host it on all these platforms. The thing is, the key thing is this ABI is standardized. I mean, it's the same across platforms, so you can run the same plugin across these different platforms. I think I made this pretty clear. One thing that we just launched is called mcp.run. I don't know if you heard all the buzz in the AI space or if you care. All right. So, but this modal context protocol is something that was recently released by Anthropic and allows you essentially to do agents, plug-in functions inside your LLMs, whatever. All right, anyway, it's kind of fun. We built this using our open source tooling. It's called mcp.run, and you can play with it. There's a bunch of different services that you can plug into your LLM, and it's pretty fun. You can write your own using WebAssembly and our tooling, and you can see WebAssembly in the wild for practical use cases with this. And yeah, I'm going to show you a little example at the end. All right, so point is, Wasm lets your users write software extensions and then use their favorite language to run them in a sandbox environment. So we made pretty clear that the key here is sandboxing, right? All right, in Wasm I.O. 2024, my good friend Andrea, who's working on Chicory, and Ben, who's our CTO, introduced the concept of language native runtimes. What is a language native runtime? Language native Wasm runtime is a runtime that is written in the host language. The language is going to host the WebAssembly runtime. Isn't that right for all runtimes? I mean, if it's Rust, the host is going to be Rust. So, yeah, we make this distinction especially for managed languages, where it's a bit harder and more complicated and inconvenient to interact with native so-called native code. So in the Go runtime, we have a Wasm runtime that is actually written in Go. And for the JVM, we have a runtime written in Java. So what are the benefits of this approach? Well, why are we doing this? And that's the whole point of the talk, in a way. All right. So Wasero is a WebAssembly runtime written in Go. It comes with an interpreter. And the interpreter is portable everywhere Go runs. Who happened to be in the Go room yesterday? All right, quite a few people. So you can leave the room, pick a coffee, and come back for the rest. Because there's admittedly a little overlap here. We're going to see how WebZero translates WebAssembly into native code for the second part. Well, for what part? So the first part, the interpreter, it's code that's been interpreted, obviously. And it runs everywhere Go runs and compiles. But we also have an ahead of time optimizing compiler for MD64 and ARM64. I'm going to show you that in depth if we have enough time. And then we're going to do a comparison with Chicory. Now, Chicory, it's kind of different, well, conceptually the same. Like, we have a runtime that's written in Java for the Java runtime, implements an interpreter, and that's not supposed to be fast, but it's portable everywhere. And then we have an ahead of time bytecode translator. Now, it's a translator to the Java bytecode, so that means that is also portable, but not quite. I mean, there's this guy here, and we're going to have a section about that too, which is the most exciting part about this, to me at least. All right. So we're going to first do a comparison between Go and Java, and hopefully surprising for a few of you. I'm going to talk a little bit more about language-native runtimes, and then we're going to go in depth into function compilation and evaluation in WebZero, and then the same for Chicory. So Go versus Java couldn't be more different, right? So one has a different, they have a different form of inheritance. Like, Java is the OOP, object-oriented language, for every, the standard nowadays, in a way. It, because of its history and because it was designed like 30 years ago now, it has deep type hierarchies in their standard library. While Go tends to prefer shallow type hierarchies, and the form of inheritance is different. It's nesting for structs, and it's kind of different. In Go, you tend to use a lot of libraries, while in Java, you tend to use frameworks. That's kind of true, but it depends also on the language that you use on the JVM. So JVM now hosts many languages, and they might prefer libraries too. But in general, that's a I would say, good distinction. Go compiles to native executables, and it achieves portability by having a great cross compilation story. So you don't need to bring in C compiler, have a sysroot, you just use the Go toolchain, and it will just support cross-compilation everywhere, and it will just work. You can compile for ARM on a Windows x86 machine and target Linux, and that's awesome. Right, and then you get that the portability is also through static linking, and libraries are shared as source code, but it's super fast as a compiler because it has some aggressive compile time caching. On the other hand, Java works in a different way. It's a bytecode target. Portability is achieved by porting the runtime, much like WebAssembly. It's really based a lot around dynamic linking. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that in a minute. And libraries are shared as binary artifacts, where binary means here bytecode. Okay, a little bit about dynamic linking. So this is the diagram. This is a diagram of startup time for Java. It's in a talk by one of the Java JVM contributors and architect, Dan Aidinga, starting fast. So this shows in a typical Java framework how long it takes to actually boot user code. And that takes a while. Why? Because before you actually reach to user code, there's a bunch of class loaders and classes initializers that have to run. And this increases startup time. This was a talk about moving stuff at build time to making things faster. I won't go into that detail, but keep notice. Someone was talking, asking about dynamic linking. This is a way to deal with that in a bytecode environment. And it brings some issues too, right? The way the JVM works is loading a lot of these modules, these classes, and every class, every non-trivial class has an initializer, just like WebAssembly modules might have an initializer, and loading each of them obviously takes some time. All right. But they also are very similar in many ways. They have a somewhat large runtime. And they have garbage collection. Go has Go routines, while Java makes some abstraction over threads. You can instantiate system threads, but very recently, especially, they have so-called virtual threads, which are really similar to Go routines. And nowadays, you can also compile. I mean, it's not new, but now recently we have a better system to build native executables. So the difference between the two really are getting smaller. All right. Now, when you want to interact with foreign code, and usually that means native code, you have FFI, right? Foreign function interfaces. In Java, those are called, that is called Java Native Interface, JNI. And in Go, that's usually called, that's CGo. That's what we know as CGo. Now, surprisingly enough, maybe, when it comes to limitations, they are actually kind of similar. So you have portability issues because now you rely on a C compiler. You have tooling issues because native code is opaque to the tooling of your platform. You cannot debug, stepwise debug using the Go to the Go debugger, the native code that you are hosting, and the same goes for the JVM. Runtime issues because your native code is not aware of your virtual threads or your Go routines or your garbage collector. So essentially, the native code runs on its own thread that it's stolen from the rest of the VM, and there's not much that we can do about it because it's completely opaque to the rest of the runtime. And you also have potential performance issues because crossing the FFI boundary usually has a cost, and safety issues. Let's talk about that in a minute. So let's suppose you want to do software extensions in Go. You could use Go plugin or write the native extensions, which are kind of related. Go plugin, there's two different flavors of Go plugin, but the one that comes with a standard library essentially only works with Unix systems, and it's super easy to break because it depends on the specific version of the compiler. And that's kind of like works everywhere for native and dynamic libraries, and that's painful. The other version that you have, it's something that comes from HashiCorp, exactly, which essentially spawns a new process and calls gRPC instead. So yeah, the other thing that you can do, use a scripting language written in Go. There are so many to pick from, like 2, 3, I don't know. And you have then to make a choice for your end users. And if you have native code written in any foreign language, what happens is that your memory kind of looks like this. It's all shared, so you might be able to corrupt the space from Zig. Let's say you write some code, some buggy code, or some unsafe code that corrupts the state of the Go VM, the Go runtime. So there's no isolation there. Well, WASM gives you that kind of isolation. What about Java? You could use class loading because that's, as we said at the beginning, class loading is one of the core mechanisms through which you achieve dynamicity. You instantiate code in Java, but then your code will run at the same levels of privileges of the rest of the code. You could use a scripting language implemented in Java. There are many actually, but you are then again making a choice for your end users, or you could write native extensions and you have all of the issues that we said earlier, including the problem with memory. Okay? So this is where we like language native runtimes. We talked about this earlier, same slide in fact. they allow you to use this code without having an FFI because they implement the WASM runtime in the language, thereby achieving maximum portability, safely interacting with the platform. The performance may not be state of the art. There are better runtimes that are more optimized, but the cost of crossing FFI, the FFI boundary sometimes is so high that even having slightly worse performance is good enough. Especially if you're doing, say, a lot of I/O. And I have an example on that. So yeah, I'm going to try to give you a very fast overview of how WASM does stuff because I want to move on to jQuery as well. So we have 5 minutes for each. All right, so Okay, so let's say you're loading a WebAssembly module. First you parse it, you validate it, and then what we do is compiling it. What that means is that depending on whether you're running an interpreted mode or compiling mode, compilation mode, two different things happen. In the interpreter mode, it's not really a compilation. We just translate it to an internal representation. This internal representation essentially has fewer opcodes and uses unstructured control flow instead of the structured control flow that's proper to WASM. So instead, we have a number of different instructions in WASM that are specialized for each type. Instead, we use just one operation and we switch over the type, and that's how we do it. But it's just an internal implementation detail. And then it's just like any interpreter you might have seen, like you switch over the opcode and loop, and that's it. All right, what about the optimizing compiler? The optimizing compiler takes a lot of hints from state-of-the-art compiler architectures like V8s for JITing or LLVM or GoZone compiler. And it works pretty much how most of these optimizing compiler work. It has a front end and a back end. The front end translates into an SSA. It does optimizations that are independent from the platform, from the target platform. And then on the back end, you generate the actual code for that. But that's pretty interesting because this is essentially a sort of just-in-time compiler, even though usually I don't call it just-in-time. I call it load time ahead of time for reasons. You can ask me later. But it does, yeah. And then the interesting part is how this gets executed. I'll go super fast here because we don't have a lot of time. Essentially, you start from the WASM bytecode that looks like that, and it's a stack-based machine. You translate it into a representation that uses values. It's a standard kind of transformation. Split the code into basic blocks, like you will do usually for compilers, and then these basic blocks are linked together by edges that represent the branch instructions in the code. And this allows you to do relatively simple control flow analysis. It's a standard procedure. Let's skip over this one. Now, once you have this SSA representation, you can do optimizations over this code. And a few classic optimizations are dead code elimination. Let's say you have this C code here, and you have a debug flag that evaluates to 1 or 0. If it's 0, then you know statically at build time that this block of code will never execute, so you can drop it. And let's say you have this expression here, A times B divided by 2. A and B in this expression are actually effectively constants, so you can propagate those constants, evaluate the expression at build time, and that's called constant folding, and then essentially your function collapses to a single return instruction, right? And not all optimizations delete code. Some optimization might blow up the size of your code depending on strategies, Anyway, once you've done that, you have your new code in your intermediate representation. And what you want to do now is generate the code on your backend for your target platform. Let's say it's ARM. You use a bunch of virtual registers because the registers on your machine are limited in numbers. First you generate this code, and then this is the instruction selection process. And then you fit those virtual registers onto the limited number of registers that you have. ARM has a limited number of registers, but MD64 is even more limited, and these are actually plenty. It's 32 for SIMD and floating point, and 30 for general purpose, which is quite a lot compared to x86. And you allocate registers, and finally, we encode all of the code that we have with the proper epilogue and prologue into actual machine code. This happens all in the Go runtime, which is kind of funny because Go is not a JITter language. So we generate a byte slice, right? And then we jump into it. That's how the function invocation works. So we compile at load time, and then at runtime, this still happens at runtime. So in your Go code, you will instantiate, compile your WASM binary, then you instantiate it. And then you can instantiate many times. It will be only compiled once, and then you jump into this code. using a trampoline, which basically stashes away the registers that are used by the go runtime, and then restores them when you have to leave the compile code and get back into the Go compile code. And this happens, for instance, when there's an error. In that case, we return with an error code, let it handle, and let it be handled properly by traditional Go code. And funnily enough, that's also what happens when you have host functions, that is, functions that are written in the Go language in this case. We return a code that represents a function that has to be called, and then we resume the WASM execution. All right, what about chicory? So I've been going around and telling you, yeah, WASM is not the same as the JVM, but now I have a WASM runtime that runs in the JVM. The WASM bytecode is kind of different, but in many ways it's similar. So for arithmetic, it's really similar, just like there's a one-to-one correspondence. But for control flow, I mentioned this earlier, the JVM uses unstructured control flow, so you have conditional branches and unconditional branches and labels, and you can jump anywhere, even backwards. This is only jumping forwards, but you can jump also backwards, and nobody will care. Right. And instead, in WASM, you have structured control flow, and that allows the spec to, allows the bytecode to be validated more safely than what you can do on the, and quickly, faster. Okay. The interpreter is relatively simple. It's even simpler than WAZero's. WAZero does this transformation on control flow, while the interpreter in chicory is actually following the spec. So it's easy to hack. It's written in pure Java. It's really easy to follow. And it's obviously portable to any JVM, right? It's, of course. We also have an AOT compiler that translates WebAssembly bytecode to Java bytecode. And it works in two modes, and essentially the backend is the same. It can generate bytecode at runtime and then through class loading, which is a very common strategy in the JVM world. It loads that dynamically, and but you can also dump that bytecode on disk and then load it whenever you want, so you don't have to recompile it every single time. There's benefits and downsides to both things. And then this is the interface. You have this machine factory. When you instantiate your module, you can pass this machine factory. It's a factory in Java tradition. We love factories. You can have an interpreter factory, or you can have a compiler factory. Let's skip over to the AOT machine factory. The AOT machine factory, what it does is, in this phase, generating bytecode. So of course, we validate the module, we parse it, but then we compile it. All right. The interesting thing here is that because both of them are stack-based machines, the analysis and the steps to generate code are really much simpler than with the WAZero that has to generate, in any case, native code. So we don't have to target ARM or MD or whatever. We just target the JVM bytecode. So, we generate a bunch of classes, specifically implementing some interfaces, and then essentially all we do is calling those functions and those methods. This is, for instance, the few lines of code that we use to do control flow analysis. This is where most of the code goes for the analysis, because that's where the differences are. But then there's a huge default case. Well, it's small, but this analyze simple is kind of huge. And the reason is this reaches over all of the opcodes that don't need any special analysis. And there are many, because in fact, we can reuse a lot of the code across the interpreter and the compiler. In fact, a lot of this code, our methods of the interpreter, and we can rely on the just-in-time compiler to inline that code. So they're not even inlined. I have 2 minutes to talk about how Android fits in the picture, and I'll try to be quick. These are performance figure. I'll have to go quick and skip those, but thing is, even compared to a state-of-the-art implementation on the WASM runtime, it's pretty good, and we didn't make a huge effort to make it good, so that's cool. So speaking of Android, Robot Chicory, as they call it, This is ncp.run, the thing that I showed you earlier. And this is an NCP library based on jQuery running in interpreted mode on Android, interacting with Gemini and calling WebAssembly functions to do, in this case, calling Google Maps. And because this is essentially calling a service, an external service, it's mostly doing I/O, so it's pretty fast, even though it's interpreted mode. But what about AOT? So if you are generating code on disk offline, then it works, because that's how the Android toolchain work. One second. So the missing thing is runtime AOT, and that requires some changes, because the Dolby VM is a register-based machine. Most of the code is still shared, and that's pretty cool. And the end goal is to actually be able to do this at the end. And that was it. Thank you. It's runtime compilation. Thanks. Yes.
Yeah, I've played it up. Thank you very much.